This is a 720 to go podcast from Chicago's WGN Radio 720.
This podcast is sponsored by ADM.
As one of the world's largest agricultural processors, ADM is uniquely positioned to serve the world's growing needs for abundant food and renewable energy. ADM.
When it comes to the business of America's farmland, you need the information from the people who know it best. That's why we bring you AgriCast with Orion Samuelson and Max Armstrong.
Good morning to you, Roger. Good morning to the world. And as we mentioned earlier in our brief conversation with Matt and Roger, we're in Arizona for a week or two or three, depending on what's going on agriculturally around the world. And as always, glad to have you along with us wherever you are this morning. And with the technology we have today, we can be almost anywhere in the world. As a matter of fact, my wife Gloria says, you know, can't really keep up with you because you sound like you're in the studio. And of course, I'm not. I'm here in Scottsdale, Arizona, after waking up in snow in Kansas City and seeing a little bit of snow on the ground when we came to O'Hare and changed planes at O'Hare, and then out to Scottsdale, and no snow on the ground here, but pretty comfortable temperatures, as a matter of fact, and I know we'll see sunshine a little bit later today. But here on the Saturday morning show, we'll be sharing with you a couple of things from the 75th anniversary convention of the National Association of Farm Broadcasters. That convention coming to an end today in Kansas City, Missouri. We'll be talking more about that and the people in our industry that I know many of you have heard and listened to throughout the years. So stay with us here on the Saturday morning show. We had the opportunity to visit with Bill Northey, Undersecretary of Agriculture, at the meeting in Kansas City. Bill, the former Secretary of Agriculture for the state of Iowa, and he'll be sharing his thoughts with you on the Farm Bill and also the agreement that still isn't signed, still not fully approved. We talk about it like it is. But Congress is not going to take up the approval vote on the new NAFTA, which is easier to remember than the name they've given the rewrite on that 20-year-old legislation. So I just call it the new NAFTA, and we'll be talking about that and other things with Bill Northey when we continue here on the Saturday morning show. Bill Northey, Undersecretary of Agriculture, from Iowa, but now based in Washington, D.C. Has that been a tough adjustment for you to make, Bill?
You know, it's been a little adjustment. Now, it's great. You got a little traffic getting into work, but once you're there, you're surrounded by farm folks doing ag stuff, and it feels like home. It could be anywhere. I'm very happy with that. But it's a little bit of adjustment. It's my first time living outside the state of Iowa for any length of time at all. So, yeah.
The midterms are over. We still don't have a farm bill, and we really don't have Congress approval of the new NAFTA. What do you think is going to happen? Do you have any feel?
You know, I don't know on the trade agreement side. I really do believe that there's some momentum to be able to get a farm bill done this year. I think there's great interest. You see likely new chairman of the House Ag Committee, Colin Peterson, say he's interested in a farm bill this year. He said it before the election. He's saying it now as well. I think there's a lot of reasons. They've done a lot of heavy lifting. I think they know where they need to go, even if they haven't gone there yet on adjusting some of the expectations of the folks in both chambers as they pass their bill. And I think there is also a risk that if we go another year, start back over, it doesn't mean the next farm bill would be, or a farm bill next year would be easy to write. Yep. May not have as much money either, depending on what budget impacts are down the road. So I think there's a lot of motivation to get it done, but there's a lot of things to do yet.
I keep hearing that crop insurance has got to be part of that bill.
I do, too. Yeah. Chairman Roberts has said that from the very beginning. In my confirmation hearings, it was, I have three questions, your answer is yes, and it was all about support for crop insurance. And that really was very much the same in both sides. That's probably the least controversial piece of the farm bill, while there are some controversies in some of the other pieces.
Are the nutrition programs still a sticking point? We've gone from food stamps to SNAP. Still a sticking point?
I believe that they are. I've not heard that they've solved, but I do believe that there's a general understanding of some direction. I'm not expert enough to be able to know or been in a room to know, but there's an understanding to some degree about how far each side needs to negotiate towards the other side. So I think it would be very possible to get there, but I don't know how much work staff has done, so maybe they've already got most of that done and are ready to go, but I've not heard that there's general agreement yet on that part of the bill.
Then I have to ask about Terry Branstad, our ambassador to China, but you've known him for a long time as the governor of Iowa. Is he involved very much, do you think, in the Chinese-U.S. discussion?
I believe that he is. I don't know firsthand, but I believe that he is, and certainly is valuable to be able to have there because of that relationship. I got there last summer while I was still Secretary of Ag in Iowa with some Iowa folks, and I just think his style kind of came through in several different instances. There'd been a little tension, a little friendliness between the U.S. and China at that point, and Governor Branstad has a great personal relationship with President Xi. At the same token, he can be tough when he needs to be tough, and some of the things going on right now and some of the trade discussion probably requires the tough side of Governor Branstad, and I think he'd be a valuable asset in that conversation as well.
Quick report on Iowa's weather and harvest.
You know, up until about 2 weeks ago, there were a lot of parts of Iowa that did not have much progress for corn and soybeans. Finally, it turned dry. Most of the soybeans are out, which when it's November, it's time to get the soybeans out. There's still pockets with a lot of corn left. And I can't tell you how many pictures I saw with folks combining corn and even soybeans in standing water. So I think there's some ruts out there in those fields after some of that harvest. But it's coming, and the crop was good in many cases. So it still was good, although they had to work awful hard to get it out.
So as we look ahead to 2019, what's going to be taking up a lot of your time?
Well, hopefully it'll be implementing a new farm bill.
Right.
So many of those provisions, certainly the conservation provisions and farm program provisions, obviously crop insurance as well, anything that would come out of that would come through our farm production and conservation shop. So we intend to be very active. I do believe and hope that we will be at a place where we'll have an agreement with China to be able to allow trade without the tariffs. So I think we'll not be working on a market facilitation program for 2019. There may well be some additional disaster provisions. We had some more hurricanes this year that folks may say need some extra help. That'll be up to Congress to decide. But we have some model for the wildfire and hurricane indemnity program that we did this last year as well. Continued work on water quality, conservation, soil health, farm program support. Challenging economic times for our producers, so loans are going to be important through Farm Service Agency and our risk management programs.
Finally, Sonny Perdue. You and Sonny seem to be on the road all the time, but he particularly travels all the time.
You know, I think I've been to 27 states now in 8 months, and I'm still over 20 states behind the secretary. He is a traveler, and he's been to so many states multiple times. We don't even capture all that. And every time I go someplace where he's been, they say, we loved having the secretary here. He got out to the farm. He climbed onto the tractor. He went into the livestock building. He is so interested in what's going on. And when he comes back from those trips, he says, I heard this. Is that really true? Do we need to check on this? Is there something that we can do better? So he listens. He's a great boss. He's a great person to work for and with, and helps us be better in our part of USDA. And I know that's true across USDA. But just a great guy to be around as well.
I've attended a couple of his listening sessions, and he is a good listener.
He is.
He does a lot more listening than talking.
He does. And then people are surprised. You'll ask a follow-up question. You said, did you mean about this program or that program? What was it that was an issue? And so, and believe me, he doesn't leave it there. Besides the other folks that are with him that are taking notes, he comes back and says, hey, Bill, I think we got a problem with this in this part of the country. Check this out. And he has brought some stuff from those listening sessions that have helped us implement programs better.
Always a pleasure, Bill. Bill Northey, Undersecretary of Agriculture, here at the NAFB Convention. It's 23 minutes after 5 o'clock here on this Saturday morning, and a little bit of winter in some parts of the country where folks are listening this morning. No sign of winter here in Arizona, except the snowbirds have come home to roost early. Just traveling to our house from the airport in Scottsdale yesterday afternoon, traffic that looked like a Chicago traffic at rush hour, and a lot of people. So if you've not made the winter trip to the Valley of the Sun in Arizona, a couple of tips to you. The restaurants are busy all the time. Make reservations for restaurants before you go, because it might be a long wait otherwise. And then be ready for the traffic backups, because they are here. But we're looking ahead this morning. As a matter of fact, coming up later this month and also into early December, a lot of state conventions of the Farm Bureau. And Illinois, Wisconsin, Iowa, Indiana, Michigan, all holding state Farm Bureau conventions where they determine the policy and the topics that will be discussed at the American Farm Bureau Federation Convention, which this year, or coming year in 2019, the first week of the new year, Farm Bureau will be meeting in New Orleans. And then a couple of weeks later, National Association of Cattlemen, the NCBA, the National Cattle Beef Association, will be holding its annual meeting in New Orleans. But let's even look beyond that, because for those of you who like to plan ahead, note yesterday from the Commodity Classic people that registration for America's largest farmer-led, farmer-focused agricultural and educational experience, the registration now will officially open at 10 a.m. next Wednesday, 10 a.m. Central Time next Wednesday, November 14. You can then register for the convention, but the 2019 Commodity Classic won't get underway until Thursday, February 28th through Saturday, March 2nd, and it'll be in Orlando, Florida. To register, reserve hotel rooms, and sign up for email updates, visit commodityclassic.com. commodityclassic.com. Early bird discounts on registration will end on January 10th of next year. It's interesting to have seen how this has grown from commodity meetings of corn, soybean, wheat producers, cotton producers. Now they put all of those organizations together and they hold their annual meetings at the event for the most part, but that makes one big show, and it's a lot easier for the agricultural companies that exhibit at the trade shows, because they can reach all of their farm customers, and many of the products are used, whether it's corn or soybeans or wheat or other crops. But this year, Wesley Spurlock Now, he's a Texas corn farmer and co-chair of the 219th Commodity Classic. And he said, you'll be among the best farmers, the best education, the best technology and innovation, and the best agribusiness all under one roof. Again, registration and housing for the 2019 Commodity Classic opens Wednesday of next week, 10 a.m. Central Time. And the complete schedule of events is available, again, at commodityclassic.com. So for you early planners, there's your opportunity to get into the hotel you want and to get into the sessions that you do want to be a part of. It is 28 minutes after 5 o'clock here on the Saturday Morning Show. In the second half of the show today, in market discussions, not going to talk about corn, soybeans, cotton, or wheat, or anything like that. We're going to talk about the soil that produces it. Ray Brownfield of Land Pro LLC, based in Oswego, Illinois, is going to join Max and me in the studio to talk about farmland value. And to answer one of the questions that I received from one of my listeners a couple of weeks ago, question was, Mr. Samuelson, is the farmland boom over? Well, that's a question I'll put to Ray Brownfield, because he deals in the sale of farmland. He deals in the management of farmland every day. And he'll be sharing his thoughts and helping me answer the question for our listener who sent it to me by email. That coming up in part two of the Saturday Morning Show after we check news. And with the better, or with the, well, what did we used to call this? We used to call it the Armistice Day and all that sort of thing. But the Department of Agriculture under Secretary Sonny Perdue is holding and did hold a ceremony recognizing all of the USDA employees who served in the military. It's an interesting story. I want to share that with you as well here on the Saturday Morning Show. Thank you very much, Roger. And here we are at 25 minutes before 6 o'clock here on the Saturday Morning Show. And Max Armstrong, I think, in the Quad Cities today at a Mecum auction. At least he was planning to travel to the Quad Cities area following the Farm Broadcasters Convention in Kansas City. But coming up on this half of the Saturday Morning Show, a visit with Ray, who is going to bring us up to date on the farmland value. And Ray Brownfield has been doing this for a long time, handling farm sales and farm management as well. So he'll be joining us here from Land Pro, based in Oswego, Illinois. But right now, we say welcome to Samuelson Says, brought to you by Wink Products Company, makers of quality specialty cleaning products since 1947. I am Orion, and this morning we're talking about 75 years and counting. The folks at Wink Products Company want to help make your life easier with a family of professional strength cleaning products, products that really work. Wink Rust Stain Remover is the number one liquid rust stain remover in the country. This professional strength formula dissolves those ugly rust stains on white sinks and toilet bowls, color fast fabrics and carpets. This little brown bottle has been around for 71 years and it's still number one. To learn more about the full line of Wink products, check us out at WHINK.com. 75 years and counting. No, that's not my age, although I do wish I were that young, but it is a very important anniversary that we celebrated this week in Kansas City. This year is the 75th anniversary of the National Association of Farm Broadcasting. I have been a member for 61 of those 75 years, working with some very talented men and women who have contributed a great deal to your knowledge and understanding of what is happening in the world of agriculture, not only in this country, but in countries around the globe. Now, for those of you who, like me, are a bit more mature, let me mention some names that have really been influential in providing farmers and ranchers with information. Can't mention them all, because there are a lot of them that I've worked with over the years, but I would bet that some of the names you hear will jog your memory as listeners. It's been my pleasure and personal honor to work with these outstanding broadcasters and friends, but here are just a few that I have worked with over the years, and I know many of you will remember. Herb Plambeck and Keith Kirkpatrick at WHO Des Moines. John McDonald at WSM in Nashville. Maynard Spies and Jim Hill at WCCO in Minneapolis. Lynn Adair at KSL in Salt Lake City. Bob Miller at WLW in Cincinnati. Art Sechrist at WJBC in Bloomington, Illinois. Wally Erickson at KFRE Fresno. Ray Wilkinson at WRAL-TV at Raleigh. Colleen Callahan at WMBD Peoria. And, of course, my colleague for four decades at WGN Chicago, Max Armstrong, who, by the way, last year served as president of NAFB. And these are just a few of the farm broadcasters that I could have named. Over the years, I've worked with them, and we've all served you with information to hopefully make your farming operation a little smarter and a little easier. And at the Night of Honors program Thursday night in Kansas City, two of the farm broadcasters were inducted into the Farm Broadcaster Hall of Fame. Don Wick, who works in North Dakota and that area, and then Mike Adams, who works in the Midwest area down at Springfield and Taylorville, where they got started, and he was also honored with the induction into the National Farm Radio Hall of Fame. Now, of course, this wouldn't have lasted 75 years if it wasn't for our advertisers who use our media to sell their products and technology to you, the producers. And then really, none of this would have lasted three quarters of a century without all of you who are in our audience every day, listening in your dairy barn, your tractor or combine cab, your pickup, or your kitchen. And we sincerely thank you for that. 75 years and counting. My thoughts on Samuelson Says, a presentation of Tribune Radio Networks. 20 minutes before 6 o'clock here on the Saturday morning show, and hope it's not freezing cold where you are, but well, I hear some of those wind chill factors being talked about. Winter is on its way, but I'm still waiting for Indian summer, and I'll have to check with Greg Solier, our TV meteorologist who covers weather for agriculture, if we are going to get an Indian summer yet before winter really arrives. We are going to check in with Ray Brownfield to talk about farmland values when we continue.
Ray Brownfield joins us here. It's good to see you this weekend, Ray, to talk a little bit about the farmland market and what's going on with producers. Land is still changing hands, isn't it, in some places?
It is. We still have, a pretty active market. This time of year, we see more properties come on the market, which is usual. But it's not overwhelming, and there's still good demand for good quality.
Let me ask you about this demand from outside of agriculture. There's so much of a buzz about these corporations building big headquarters. The search is on to get these companies to come into a community, and when they plop them down, they bring a lot of jobs, they take a lot of land out of production, they buy land from someone. That's happening, and that's driving up prices in certain individual situations, correct?
It has. was across the border into Wisconsin and Racine. We saw Foxconn come in and spend tremendous amounts of money per acre. However, that influences just that local area. What does influence, if those people, and they do have 1031 exchange money, then they will go to another area and try to replace that. And they have the money and the cash to do that, so therefore that creates a more competitive market where they go as well. So that can be the case.
So with the tax law, they can go out 150 miles, 200 miles, whatever. That will in turn support the farmland market where they buy.
They can go anywhere as long as it's income producing real estate. So, yeah.
We always focused on housing and big corporations. Some places we have these massive logistics warehouses around Chicago, for example, and that has to, again, have an individual local impact.
It does. The market is, when you see a million square feet warehouse going on I-55 out here, that's a lot of land to come into the process. And it does create those particular opportunities, but it's a very local opportunity, as I say. It doesn't impact land that far out, and it's just internally in that particular area within probably a 5 to 10 mile radius, if that.
Ray, I'm going to let you answer a question I received by email a couple of weeks ago from a farmer thinking of selling his farm. And his question to me, which I haven't answered, is the farmland boom over?
That's a really good question. You know, I think there's pressure on the market because of numbers of things that would indicate that we're not going up. There may be some cases where you'll hear of a strong market in a very area where two guys got together and they wanted that ground so bad they paid a big price. But overall, I think we're going to see continued pressure until the commodity market has come back on a sustainable basis. Now, is a boom here? It's still a lot better than it was even 10 years ago. So you got to look at it on a total picture. But overall, I'd say there is not such thing as a boom as we knew it in 2013.
And a quick question, who's buying the farms, the neighbor or investors?
It's mostly local farmers / investors, local folks perhaps. The institutional buyers are there, but they're extremely particular on what they can achieve in the way of their performance that they have to have.
What about cash rent value as we go into the end of the year?
You know, we had thought earlier on in the growing season that it might be more challenging to negotiate leases for 2019, basically, is what we're going into. But yields in Illinois particularly have been pretty good. And with the marketing assistance program that we're getting from the federal government on soybeans at, 87.5 cents a bushel times even 60 or 70 bushels, if that's in, that's another added benefit that I think we appreciate. We don't like to take handouts, but we'll take it. Overall, it hasn't been bad at all. People are understanding that we can remain about the same for another year. I would say this time next year, if things don't straighten out from the tariff viewpoint and from the commodity issues and costs of doing business, it could be more challenging. But for this time, right, everything's gone pretty well. I think people did a job of marketing their grain back in May for harvest delivery or further out. And so overall, we're feeling pretty good about it.
How important is crop insurance?
Very, very important. I hope in the new program that it does go through as we hope it does. And we need that security blanket. We really do.
The farm bill does matter once again, doesn't it? I mean, there were a couple of farm bills there. Maybe we weren't paying quite as close attention, but it really does matter because of that limited but important safety net.
Absolutely so. I don't think anybody wants to take handouts, but we may need that at time, and it's good to have.
Your farmland manager hat on for just a moment here. As you're sitting down with growers and as you're sitting down with outside investors who are certainly an important player here as you work with farmers, farming the ground of absentee owners. What are some of the most important things you would say to farmers at this stage?
As to working with an investor?
Right. And a farmland manager.
Yeah, I would say make sure that you're continuing to work with good communications back and forth. That's so important to know what's going on out there on both sides of the coin. Use the best technology, the technology you can. Timeliness of operation is so important to all of us. And I would say this, you can get too big. We do see this weather window from time to time. People get really stretched because it's just the same window weather, whether you're 1,000 acres or 10,000 acres. So be careful about that as to how you're getting the job done. And certainly conservation practices, the tillage, all those things are so important to us for the long pull because this land should go on and on. well beyond us. So that's our concern, to maintain it and improve it.
So don't get so big you slop the job around, I guess, so to speak. Farmland managers, outside investors, still concerned about the quality of job being done with that land.
Absolutely. And a number of our landowners now are, when we have a change due to retirement, they want us to bring in younger farmers, which I think is great. So maybe son or our daughter or whomever's in with dad or grandpa, I think that's a wonderful thing to see, a sustained agriculture.
Good to see you again, sir. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you.
Ray Brownfield, Land Pro LLC. He's located in Oswego, Illinois.
Well, before we leave you this morning, let's take a look at where markets ended the trading week yesterday. Wheat futures fell to a one-week low yesterday on concerns about export demand and a strengthening dollar. Corn followed wheat lower on technical selling, but soybean futures turned higher on firming U.S. cash markets. And there's optimism about those talks with China coming up later this month. Chicago Board of Trade December wheat settled down 5¾ cents at $5.02 a bushel. December corn ended lower, down 3¾ cents a bushel at $3.69¾. And then wheat fell on concerns that U.S. wheat sales are falling short of the USDA forecast for exports in the 2018-19 marketing year. The USDA said we'll get to 1,025,000,000 bushels of wheat. That would be an increase from 901 million bushels a year earlier. But competition from Russia is biting into that world soybean or world wheat market. Russia is the world's top wheat supplier, continuing to sell grain at competitive prices. And as we take a look at the weekly change, December wheat down 6¾ cents a bushel for the week. The January soybean contract down just a penny on the week, while December corn ended down a penny and a half a bushel for the week. Turning to livestock futures, a look at what happened at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange. Live cattle futures fell more than 1% yesterday, sagging under pressure from lower wholesale beef prices and slightly weaker trades in cash cattle markets in the Southern Plains. Front month December live cattle futures down $1.97 at $114.57 a hundredweight. And the contract finished above its two-month low notched earlier in the session yesterday, while the percentage decline of 1.8% was the biggest drop in cattle futures since June. But wholesale beef prices have declined 2 days in a row, according to USDA, suggesting demand may be flagging. We're coming into the Thanksgiving season when turkey takes over as the main feature on meat at the Thanksgiving dinners. And that way pork and beef kind of take a back seat. So the lean hog futures narrowly mixed. Potential gains capped by ample supplies. The December hog contract up just 17 cents, 108 yesterday, $55.80. So that's where we ended up the week. And as I mentioned earlier, something I want to talk about that happened at the U.S. Department of Agriculture this week, and let me share it with you. In a ceremony recognizing all employees for their military service, Secretary of Agriculture Sonny Perdue this week formally offered a measure of closure to a group of Vietnam-era veterans still serving in the USDA ranks. The secretary also observed the centennial of the armistice that ended World War I, November 11th, 1918, with a wreath laying in memory of 69 USDA employees who perished during that conflict. But let me share some of the Secretary Perdue's statement at that event. He said, "We need to do the right thing for a generation that bore the heavy toll of war, yet served with honor. And the healing begins by a heartfelt welcome home. As a veteran who served during these times, I understand the challenges you faced when you returned, but today I join countless Americans who are forever grateful for your valor and commitment to our nation. Secretary Perdue, and I didn't know this, but Secretary Sonny Perdue served as an Air Force captain from 1971 to 1974. He is among approximately 2,200 current USDA employees who are Vietnam War veterans. So, a ceremony at the U.S. Department of Agriculture paying tribute to the veterans as we approach the Veterans Day observance coming up November 11th. That will be tomorrow, as a matter of fact. So anyway, as always, we appreciate your company here on the Saturday Morning Show, and we appreciate the work of our engineer, Bob Ferguson, who makes it all happen together as though we were sitting across the window from each other in the studio, and we're not. I'm sitting in Scottsdale, Arizona. He's sitting at WGN in Chicago, but he always gets it all put together. So we return home from the National Association of Farm Broadcasting Convention. Good time had by all, because 75 years is a milestone. And I can't help but think of the technological change that has happened not only in agriculture, but in how we as broadcasters, whether it's radio, television, podcasting, or whatever else, how the technology has changed to allow what we do today. When I was introduced as farm director at WGN Radio Chicago back in 1960, the station did a 3-day broadcast from the Farm Power Show, the M&W Farm Power Show. We were on a farm in Anchor, Illinois, and they flew me in from Green Bay, where I was ending a 4-year career as broadcaster, to join WGN. And to do that broadcast then from a farm in downstate Illinois, a truckload of equipment and 3 engineers. My, what a change we've seen in that ability to cover activity wherever it happens.
Orion Samuelson keeps you connected to the world of business and agriculture on WGN. Hear his reports weekday mornings on The Steve Cochran Show and during the noon hour on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Plus, catch Orion and Max on Saturday mornings at 5 a.m. only on Chicago's WGN Radio 720.